to do. And I don't see anything about Jesus or the Bible or any of that because, you know, it's not cool. And now I guess we're going to be seeing it because Deepak Chopra says so. What else does that make me think about? It makes me think about the fact that we were all sold the fact that, oh, American workers are just so lazy and they want to make all this money. Don't make your things in America. Why don't we buy it from the good people of China? They're so good. They're so holy. They don't want any profit. They just want to make all this stuff for the good of the world and they want to sell it to you for cheap. And now what did we find out? No, people are people all over the world and they suffer from some very deep issues such as greed, no matter where they come from. And so what did we get out of China? We got a lot of tainted goods. We have children in Haiti dying. We had children in Panama dying from tainted cough syrup with ingredients made from China. We had pets in America dying with tainted pet food containing melamine out of China. All of this rose-colored lenses that we use about other cultures, and we're just so into defaming our own and just treating it like nothing. It's got to stop. We've got to look at the whole picture. The whole world belongs to all of us, and we can look at all of it objectively and take what is excellent and use that and be proud of it. And don't let anybody tell you that what you have and who you are is not good enough. There's a ton of good stuff. So let's think about that before we start lionizing the next culture out there and saying everything good is from there and everything bad is from America. Talking about the good stuff out of America, yeah, the Brussels sprouts are great out there now. The pomegranates are absolutely fantastic right now at the farmer's market. You need to get out there. They're just absolutely delicious. There's a lot of good produce out there made right here in America, organically farmed. Isn't that fantastic? Yay! All right, it's not us against them. It's just us realizing that we have so much already right here, and let's enjoy that. You remember how one of the other things was, oh yeah, you know, let's not do all of this old-fashioned farming. How ridiculous. Let's go industrialize. That's the thinking person's way. Let's do monocropping. Just think what we can do with the machines. We can feed the whole world for cheaper. This is the cure for hunger. Hey, join us. Let us industrialize agriculture and let us just get every humble plate filled with just good nutritious food. And what have we found out? The soil is depleted. We're paying a lot of heavy costs for food that lacks nutrients, that lacks soul, that's very heavy on the carbon imprint. Again, we're going back to the good old-fashioned stuff. Something to be said about the good old-fashioned stuff. Anyway, but that's not my topic today. What's my topic today? My topic today has to deal with kind of similar things, but the fact that we're all hurting, and I think that's what the interest in who can we learn from? What are the teachers? What can the teachers tell us, you know? And a lot of people have been writing me over the past 4 weeks, really, and we've been saying, you know, this is important because if we're not together emotionally, if we're not together spiritually, if we don't have that together, the magnesium will be messed up. Forget it. Forget your sodium. It's going to be messed up because the core of who you are is not in balance. So it's important to talk about health and spirituality together because one absolutely does affect the other. We've been talking about borderline personality disorder last week, and I got a lot of calls and I got a lot of emails. And what was exciting is that what we came to, it wasn't us against the perpetrators, okay? It was all of us in on this. Regardless of what side of the issue you're on, borderline personality disorder affects people on both sides of it. Those going through it, those loving those who go through it, or in families with those who have it. It's an issue that affects all of us. So let's talk about it from that point of view. And I know a lot of you wanted to talk to AJ Mahari, our guest today. She's author and speaker of the audiobook. We have an audiobook that we're offering today. It's called Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality. Last week we offered her book, Understanding Borderline Personality. And you know what? It was so exciting because everybody who wrote me about that actually got a copy. How exciting is that? She emailed it directly to you. That's generosity. That's what I'm talking about. You know, that we're spreading some love and we're spreading some of that generosity in lean times. But you know what? I'm getting all thirsty and lonely and all of this because I haven't had my P2P hug. Affirmations work better when we're like in a tight clinch. So can I have you guys gather around me, please? Eric, I want you next to me. And then Hayden. And of course, Jilly, you've got to be in here. Hey, Melly Mel, come on in. I want everybody in this hug. Everybody, that includes you. Robbie Wacker, get in. Jim B, get in. Khalil Welbum and your wife, get into the big P2P hug. All of you out there, hey, I want to say hi to the good professors out in North Dakota, University of North Dakota, that listen to Page to Pantry. Hey, yeah, I want to say hello to all the psychotherapists and the psychiatrists who actually are P2P fans and you're part of the posse. I thank you for your input and all of the stuff. And you know what? Call in. A lot of you have promised to call in today. Most importantly, I want to give a hug to those for whom hugs are painful, for whom hugs are really reminders of the rejection and the abandonment and that core wound that you suffered as a child and you're having a very hard time getting away from it, where love is actually pain. Come in as close as you want to. This is P2P. It's safe over here. This is Nikki Gallucci. Let's take a moment and just understand that although there are waves of pain in this world, you know what? We've got a strong core here. And wasn't that great to find out last week that what we have together here is even stronger than family bonds? The happiness that we create on Page to Pantry is 42 times greater than what you can get from your closest family member in terms of making you a happier person. That's exciting. The family that you choose, the friends that you choose, a powerful, powerful way of just getting healthy and moving forward. But I don't want to hog the microphone because today I'm going to leave the lines open very, very quickly to you guys. You're on Page to Pantry. We're going to have AJ Mahari, author and speaker of audiobook, Emotional Dysregulation and Borderline Personality. A lot of you said, Nikki, we want to call in early. Give that number out early. 818-985-5735. And I'm going to be joined in a few minutes by Wendy Talaro. Wendy Talaro, of course, a valued member of the P2P posse. Again, this is a live group. We actually communicate, all of us, by email. It doesn't stop when we get off the air. A lot of you share things with me, and I really appreciate that. The deep things that you share, it helps so many of us. So Wendy will be joining us. She's a P2P posse member and has been impacted by borderline personality disorder, a long-time KPFK family member as well. So we'll introduce her in a few minutes, and we're excited to have her. AJ Mahari, welcome. How are you?
Thank you so much. Fine. How are you?
Great. AJ, the exciting thing is that not only are you author and speaker, but you're also a life coach for people with borderline personality disorder as well as their loved ones. And I know a lot of the listeners who wrote me in the last few weeks were like, where can we get help? And I told them to go to the Page to Pantry website, and you actually have your information linked directly from our website. So if people go to the PageToPantry.com website and click on your link, but tell us what it is anyway. They can get directly to you.
Oh, well, my main website is borderlinepersonality.ca. And for life coaching, though, it's touchtonecoaching.ca.
All right. Well, let's jump right in into this whole situation, the borderline personality disorder. What is emotional dysregulation in borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, well, that certainly is like an easy question to ask and a complicated one to answer. But basically, if you think about it, general people have just an ability they learn in childhood over time as they emotionally mature to just sort of flow with their emotions, feel their emotions, you know, cope with their emotions, right? And people who develop borderline personality disorder because of that arrested development in early childhood, which is that core wound of abandonment, they don't develop the same interpersonal skills on how to cope with their emotions. And so emotional difficulties with people, with borderline personality disorder really consist of two factors, and that's emotional vulnerability plus deficits in the skills needed to regulate those emotions. That's just like a really brief answer.
Okay. So one of the things that Wendy was, you know, really interested in quoting from your book was your original book about understanding borderline personality disorder was the fact that love is pain to someone who has borderline personality disorder. What does that mean? Does that mean that if I want to give them my famous P2P hug, they would actually find that really offensive, or it would bring up too much emotions? What is that about?
Well, I think that that would depend on the individual person with borderline personality disorder, but for a lot of people with BPD, love being pain is simply that it kind of means that, you know, because of this abandonment wound and trauma and lack of arrested development, all of these emotional difficulties, you know, love really can't be trusted. And sometimes certain people with BPD can get to certain stages of some kind of love, but it's usually inconsistent. And then there's this thing called splitting, which is devaluing on one hand and idealizing someone on the other. And so things are always shifting, and there's really not consistency there. And also, I would just have to say, as somebody who had borderline personality disorder, that definitely when I had BPD, I would say that any love that I felt or love that I tried to share, you know, kind of had a toxic, unhealthy quality to it, sadly enough. So it's a really complicated subject, but yes, it arouses interpersonal relating, liking someone or feeling liked even sometimes doesn't kind of gel with how somebody with BPD can sort of hate themselves and have so much shame that that gets projected out onto others. So any kind of relating, love, liking can often impact them in different ways that just creates too much emotional intensity, and then they don't know how to cope. Then they end up trying to defend against these feelings, which then gets in the way of any consistent kind of love or liking going on in a healthy way.
Wendy Talaro, thanks for being here with us. I want to know what the hardest part of getting over a relationship with someone who has borderline personality disorder has been for you.
Two parts, one of which is coming to grips with my own hooks, with my own personal hooks to where this person was able to work themselves into my heart, under my skin, leaving me self-doubting, leaving in a place of wanting to give this love and feeling that it has been profoundly rejected, but also sensing that I was never seen in the relationship, being completely invisible.
Okay, you've mentioned, and we talked a little bit about that, about you having feeling that you have a very high thermostat for abuse because of abuse that you suffered as a child. And you feel that one of the major things that you need to do is to reset that thermostat so that it has a lower threshold, so that you're able to immediately say, uh-uh, this is not a good thing, I need to get away. So are you saying that one of the barbs for you was needing to give love?
One of the barbs for me was needing to be understood and wanting to be understood by this other person, wanting this other person to really see who I am and never sort of sensing that at times maybe I was starting to be able to be seen. But in those triggered states, I would go right back into when he would hit his triggered states, I would slip right back into invisibility imperceptibly.
Now, the one thing I want to ask, and that this is probably a really personal question, is did you feel in your childhood that you were invisible as well?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Yeah.
The reason I ask, and AJ, I want you to comment on this, is that a lot of times it is said that we try to fix our relationships from childhood as adults. And so let's say we had an emotionally distant father, for example, that as adults we have a tendency to seek emotionally distant men to try to get them to love us because that proves that dad was wrong, I really was lovable. Is this something that you see in your work?
Oh, absolutely. And that is true of both people who have borderline personality disorder and people who don't and are in relationships with them, because that's not like necessarily a, quote, borderline thing. That's a very human thing, that the relationships and how they went with our parents in our childhoods kind of can define our relationships over the course of our lives if we don't kind of, you know, get the help we need and sort of change course. And I'd just like to say I wasn't sure who was asking whom if they felt invisible in their childhood, but I would just like to say in my childhood, because I had two parents with borderline personality disorder, wow, I mean, invisible was sort of like, yeah, I mean, it turned me into someone who was trying to do almost anything. I mean, I would have stuck to the wall if it was humanly possible to try to go, I'm over here, you know, look at me, see me, help.
Okay, now, AJ, it's time for me to ask you a personal question. Mm-hmm. Do you think that your borderline personality disorder was as a result of your parents having, or do you think that part of it was genetic, a predisposition towards it? Now looking back, what do you think set you up for that?
Well, you know, again, these questions are always questions that would require an hour's worth of answer, but I think that there was a genetic there is likely a genetic component, okay? But I think that, you know, or a predisposition, all right? But then a lot of people argue, and I argue for this point of view also, that the environment is so important. So, you know, I kind of probably had a double whammy because I think a lot of this is intergenerational throughout my family. So if there was that predisposition and I came, you know, I arrived in the world with that, but I arrived into an environment that was abusive and toxic and dysfunctional and relationally a nightmare and also was not validating. So, you know, one of the key things that makes this really, explode in a person, if you will, and develop is this invalidating environment because, you know, young children need certain things in order to be able to develop healthy. So it's important that, you know, like an invalidating environment and a lack of nurture combined with whatever there might be a predisposition for really creates, you know, sort of the atmosphere for borderline personality disorder.
Wendy, one of the things that we've always talked about is the fact of what the economic reality in the country and in the world is right now. As men and women relate, sometimes in relationships, one person is economically stronger than the other person. How about those kind of barbs? Do you think that is utilized as well? And then, AJ, I want you to answer after Wendy and tell me how much conscious manipulation is used by people with borderline personality disorder in situations where their partner may not be economically as solid as they are. Wendy, you want to say something?
A form of financial support can be used almost like a hook to keep somebody in a relationship that they otherwise might be inclined to leave or might feel the need to save themselves from. Sometimes the finances might feel like a form of approval. Oh, well, you're being a good girl or you're being a good boy, so I'm going to reward you by giving you this money or giving you this form of physical, tangible support for quote-unquote good behavior. If there are abusive and manipulative relationships out there that have a financial component, I can see that exacerbating the tolerance of abuse where none should be tolerated.
AJ, do you have a comment?
Yeah, I think that's a good point Wendy made, and I think that, you know, money, like so many other commodities really in a relationship, is definitely a representation of power, and it can be wielded and used and abused, as power over someone else. And just like anything really, material and even psychological things.
So you're saying that someone with borderline personality disorder at the same time is emotionally probably at the toddler level where the disconnect happened, but at the same time they're in this power struggle where they need to wield power over the other person and, you know, reward and take away favors and back and forth just to control that other person.
Well, and actually more than take away favors or whatever, it's a wielding of power that actually is an overcompensation for what is actually the borderline's helplessness. So it's kind of an overcompensation. And also, more than taking back things, it's like just people with BPD tend to punish for things. There's this sense of, you know, things aren't fair all the time. So they tend to wield power and then use power, or someone might use money over someone, to punish.
Okay, so how does someone who has been in a relationship with someone with borderline personality disorder extricate themselves? How does Wendy, for example, begin to set her thermostat lower? And, you know, where does that begin?
Well, I think as Wendy's kind of talked about, it kind of, firstly, it begins with realization and you know, growing awareness about what's really going on. It involves trusting your own feelings, which can be really difficult when you're close to somebody with BPD because they're going to have you sort of confused about, you know, who's doing what and what's what. But it's important to know that, you know, some of the simplest things we can say in the world we often ignore. When, you know, when it seems too good to be true, it usually is. When it feels like something's off, there usually is something off. And so when something doesn't feel right or it causes you pain, those are kind of the warning signs that, you know, you need to look into that and pay attention to that. And for people that means different things. For some it means life coaching. For some it means lots of reading. For some it means those two things and therapy, you know, and that type of thing.
So your audio book, Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality, is this a self-help book that helps people who have borderline personality disorder? Because I know you have two versions of the book.
Yeah, there's two versions of it. It's actually just like I call it an audio program, but there's two versions. And one is basically talking to those who have borderline personality disorder, kind of explaining what it's about, what happens, and kind of what you can do about it. And then there's a second version, which includes a fourth audio track, which specifically talks about what does everyone who is involved with somebody with BPD really need to know and understand about this emotional dysregulation. Because emotional dysregulation in those with BPD is at the heart of all of the things that people in relationships with them are going to experience.
Okay. I have Lon on the line from Hollywood. Lon has been holding right from the beginning of the show. I want to take Lon's question or comment right away. Lon, welcome to Page to Pantry.
Oh, hi.
Hey, how are you? Glad you're here.
Lon,
are you there?
Hello?
Yes, Lon.
Yes.
I can hear you.
Okay. Oh, I have this radio on. That was the thing that was bothering me.
All right. We'll give Lon a few minutes to get the radio.
I got it, yes. So as far as borderline personalities are concerned, how do you determine, you know, what kind of factors determine that?
You mean what kind of factors determine whether you have borderline personality disorder? AJ, do you want to just list those things like we listed last week for Lon, please?
Oh, actually, I don't have those in front of me right now.
I know that, you know, you mentioned things like a franticness. You know, there was a lot of anxiety.
Frantic attempts to avoid abandonment at all costs.
Right, and that can be abandonment that's, you know, actual or just perceived abandonment. And I think I can have those for you in one second here.
Yes, and I know that while you're looking at those up, bringing that up, I know you talked about, you know, the whole idea of attachment that is too quick and too soon. These are people who, in 1 hour of meeting you, will say, I love you, I want to spend the rest of my life with you. Those are some of the things that cropped up. I remember that these are people whose moods switch very quickly, and they can switch from, you know, an emotional high to emotional despair very quickly in the space of just a couple of hours, and, you know, have this roller coaster type of effect in terms
of
the...
Yeah, and the thing about that is that that's exactly what emotional dysregulation is, and I have those in front of me now, too. So it's like also, you know, a pattern of unstable and intense interpersonal relationships, which is the characterized by alternating between sort of idealizing someone and devaluing them. So in other words, the person is all perfect and great and wonderful. All of a sudden, the person, you know, is stinky, horrible, and I hate them. People with borderline personality sort of have identity disturbance, which means they really don't have a sense of self or self-image that's consistent. They don't really know who they are. They struggle to kind of understand what their long-term goals are or career choices, friends desired, that kind of thing. They're often impulsive in at least two areas that they include here that are self-damaging, like spending, sex, substance abuse, binge eating, could be many other things as well. Recurrent suicidal behavior often, gestures or threats or self-mutilating behavior, such as cutting or burning, bruising. And then what they call affective instability, so this is what we're talking about with this emotional dysregulation, marked shifts from baseline mood to depression, irritability, or anxiety, which can last for minutes to hours and sometimes, in some rare cases, for a few days. Chronic feelings of emptiness. Often, you know, they feel empty and bored and nothing kind of sort of makes them feel alive or in the here and now. Inappropriate intense anger, difficulty controlling anger, and frequent displays of temper. And then the last one, transient stress-related paranoid ideation or severe dissociative symptoms. That's now some people with borderline personality disorder have stress-related, obviously, paranoia going on, which is complicated. And then there's some dissociation that occurs for most in BPD, but in this ninth trait, they're talking about severe dissociative symptoms. So that's like a little more serious and more complicated to talk about, but that's the traits.
That's interesting. It's the bipolar. It's more or less a bipolar analysis of things, isn't it?
Bipolar is quite different in many ways, although there's some things that might overlap. Now, that not all of these traits that I just listed, but the thing about the two things, borderline personality disorder and bipolar disorder, while they have marked differences, they're often hard to tell apart when somebody goes to a psychiatrist. Sometimes they might get one diagnosis or the other, and later that changes.
But what's the difference? What are some of the differences between the two?
Well, first of all, bipolar, it's generally held now and accepted that that is more of a chemical thing in the brain. And it involves sort of like mania and depression. So at one end, they get really manically high, you know, can't sleep for days at a time, have sort of like these, the idea that they could do anything in the world, like grandiose ideas and whatnot, a lot of impulsive spending and kind of grandiose
things. That's where it's similar right there, when it starts getting into the impulsivity.
Well, but, of course. And then at the other end of bipolar, though, is like severe depression. So.
That would all be related in a sense to control theory, wouldn't it be? Like as far as control systems and something of that sort.
I know that bipolar, they usually give lithium and things like that, right?
There's a lot of medications for that.
Yeah. So, Lon, well, thank you for calling in. If you want a copy of A.J. Meharry's Emotional Dysregulation, it's an audio book and it can be downloaded in MP3 format. Write me. I'll give out my email at the end of the hour and you can continue your search from there. And of course, don't forget that AJ has a lot of information, a blog and all of that stuff, so you can keep up with all of the things that she writes.
Thanks a lot.
Great. Thank you. Anthony, thank you for being on Page to Pantry. What's up?
Hello. Yes, Anthony from Long Beach. I'll be as succinct as possible and give other people a chance to comment and also ask questions. Let me get right to the point. I entered a three-year relationship. At the beginning of the relationship, I lacked a lot of integrity. I was not emotionally responsive to my lady. I had a one-night stand. She got pregnant. We lost the baby through miscarriage. And then she found out about my one-night stand, and then I turned my whole life around spiritually, emotionally. I became very responsive to her needs, didn't have any desire to be a single runabout man again. I was very loyal to her. And for about a little over a year, I totally kissed butt, so to speak, to make things good. And I truly did fall in love with her. It wasn't just out of guilt. Partly, the guilt did motivate me to see my actions, but I really did have an epiphany. I was already going in a spiritual way, but her breakup with me as a result of my infidelity was the catalyst to get my act together. Then we got together, and the whole time she kept saying to me, if a man is really good and responsive, really to my needs, I will be good to him. And as a result of that, I believed and took her on her word, and she became extremely emotionally punishing and very vicious and vindictive. I hung in there thinking that it would turn in a good direction, and it went up and down, and it turned out this towards the very end, and I'm ending right here, she became truly, truly vindictive, and the relationship ended. And I just kind of want some answers as to what went down.
Wow. Now, before AJ speaks, I just have a question for you, Anthony.
Sure.
Was the vindictiveness always related to the fact of the one-night stand? Was that always thrown up in your face every single time in that entire year? Could you guys never get away from that one event?
Exactly. That was one. And the second part was that she constantly claimed that I was not emotionally attentive in the beginning of our relationship, and she kept bringing that up, even though I totally changed, and she knew it, and her friends recognized it. I did everything, not you would not believe what I did. And I feel at this point very humiliated and angry at myself that I believed her, that if a man was responsive, she would be good. Then I had to analyze, why did I hang in there so long? Do I have insecurity issues or need the validation? And I realized, no, I did not, because I've always had healthy relationships. But I felt bad about being so emotionally unavailable to her in a one-night stand and we losing our child. That can be traumatizing for a mm-hmm. woman who goes through that. So that's why I hung in there thinking that, okay, if I'm loving and tender and honest and good mm-hmm. and really, really responsive to her, it'll help heal. But she became, I hate to say it, I'm not being sexist at all because I know it's an individual thing, not a class or a structural thing. She, particular her, she wielded power over me, and I let it happen. It was a vindictive, mean power.
AJ, do you have any comments on that?
Well, I just think it's important to know that, unfortunately, sadly, this is a very common experience for people in certain in these kinds of relationships. And, you know, it sounds like, you know, with a one-night stand, of course, you know, it's difficult for anyone, but there would have been some broken trust there. And sometimes people, especially with BPD, when there's broken trust, it's like they just don't ever let go of that, and then they just look for that, you know, constantly more and more. But I would say that, you know, her wielding power over him and you know, the vindictiveness and that sort of thing, it's admirable that he tried to stick in there for a while, and he hoped that his love would have some positive effect and that there could be some change and healing. But that's one thing I always really try to stress to people, you know. We can only be responsible for ourselves and how we love and how what we can bring to a relationship, and we can't change other people. So, you know, I just really hope for Anthony's sake that he's able to find his, you know, healing from this and just understand that, you know, we just really can't heal other people.
And, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with who you are, Anthony. Like you said, you've had other healthy relationships before. You will have other healthy relationships in the future. So I hope this doesn't color the whole relationship situation for you, where you're, you know, you shy away from this and believe that all women are this way, because it's not true.
No, I don't take that view at all. I'm very selective about that. I know that was a particular person, but I'm just trying to figure out how can a person be consistently so mean. I understood the fact when she found out about the affair, when I wasn't attentive to her needs in the beginning of our relationship, when I wasn't responsive to her and her needs after we lost our child, I understand her being angry at first. But over more than a year, I totally turned around
mm-hmm.
to the point where she got irritated that I was so responsive to her.
Interesting. I want Wendy Talaro, who's been in a relationship with someone with borderline personality disorder, to speak about some of these issues that you're talking about. The shame, the humiliation, you know, how could I let myself, you know, be used and abused so much and all of that. Wendy, you have something to say?
The only words of comfort, if it can be comfort at all, that I can offer are that, stop looking for the answer for why she would continue to behave in that fashion. The only answers that you can find are within you to resolve within yourself why it is that you put up with that. I know that there are reasons that you delineated over the line here.
Right.
But I think when it comes to her motivations, when it comes to why she would continue to be so punishing for so long, it's almost like borderline rage is inexhaustible. It's like a black bottomless well.
Extremely, extremely rageful.
Yeah.
Extremely.
There's no.
But I brought it out of her.
You triggered it. You triggered it.
Yes, AJ, go ahead, please.
You weren't the source.
Please don't take on that responsibility mm-hmm. because even if you did something, you know, like the one night stand, whatever. You did your best. You're human. We all make mistakes. You're not responsible for what came out of her. That's a really important point, and mm-hmm. I hope that you can hear that, because what she does, what she did, or what she may continue to do, you know, what you have to try to do is just not focus on that. It's a lack of closure. It's really difficult emotionally. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can really let that go now, and
yes.
You're not to blame for how she behaves.
Exactly. And not be caught in the same vortex that she seems to be caught in about not being able to move on from a painful incident. Anthony, I'd like to send you this Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality, which is an audiobook by A.J. Mahari. I'll give out my information at the end, and then you keep in touch with me and let me know how you're doing.
Anthony, forgive yourself.
All right, that was Wendy Talaro. We're going to take a quick break. You're on Page to Pantry. We're on with A.J. Mahari, author and speaker on the audiobook Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality Disorder. I'm also on with Wendy Talaro, who is a P2P posse member, has been in a relationship with screwed up people, specifically one who had borderline personality disorder, working through her healing and wanting to share what she has been going through firsthand with people out there to encourage you to reach out, to not be silent about this, to speak up, to break the myth and the mystery and the secrecy and the silence that chains people on both sides of these kinds of disorders in the closet. We need to get out with it. We need to talk about it openly. We need to heal. These cannot remain family skeletons anymore. You're on Page to Pantry with Nikki Gallucci. Quick break, and we'll be right back. The line when we come back for your call is 818-985-5735. I still have 8 of these audiobooks, Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality by A.J. Mahari, to give away, and I'd like to hear your opinion. Be right back.
Paul Robeson comes alive in
Speak of Me as I Am,
an unforgettable one-man musical play starring K.B. Solomon, who provides a stirring historical tribute to a great American hero.
Thank you, Peggy.
You're welcome, Paul.
Peggy, since I've been back from the other side, I notice they still scandalize my name. That is why I will be appearing in 2 benefit performances for the Venice Peace and Justice Pantry, Friday, December 19th, and Sunday, December 21st, in Venice, California. Check the KPFK calendar for details or call 310-365-0985.
That's 310-365-0985.
The Peace and Justice Pantry is a partnership project of Venice Food, Not Bombs, and Venice United Methodist Church. Special thanks to KPFK, our media sponsor.
Hello, everybody out there. I know a lot of you are like, oh, wow. You know, I thought you guys were going to say, Nikki, we're just so used to your light, airy personality. Can we get away from these heavy topics? But no, you guys are like, stay on these topics. And, you know, I have a sister who's a psychiatrist, and she mentioned to me that in the hospital, when they have discussions and there's a patient there with any kind of psychiatric conditions, that the doctors tend to whisper. And she said, she always said, you know, why are we whispering? Why are we making this seem like it's some sort of horrific, you know, disease that cannot even be talked about out loud, let alone, you know, and the patient is right here watching us whisper the names of the conditions that he has, you know, he has. And she said, well, this has got to stop. This is why people don't want to talk about it. This is why people, you know, and she goes, even the name itself, borderline, I mean, borderline between what? Sanity and insanity? She goes, these are the stereotypes that we attach to these conditions, and that's why nobody wants to say, I have it, I need help, or I'm in a relationship with someone who has it, or you know what, my family has this situation, we need help, because there's all of this nonsensical stigma. So everyone that I've heard from so far has said it's time to break that stigma. It's time to talk about these things. These are the things that really are killing us. These are the things that are leading to the stress conditions, the skin conditions, the pain that seems to be coming from your gallbladder, but nobody can find it. That other situation that seemed like pancreatitis and all of your enzymes were off, but nobody ever found what it was. The rashes, the hives, the eczema, all of the other things that you've tried so hard, and you've tried everything out there. You're eating all the right things and nothing seems to help. These are the kinds of toxic relationships and toxic conditions that you haven't been able to talk about so far because of the shame, because of the stigma, but not on Page to Pantry. It's us against the condition, regardless of what part and what side of this condition you're on. You're back on Page to Pantry with Nikki Gallucci, your buddy, and I'm here with AJ Mahari, author and speaker on the audiobook Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality, and Wendy Talaro. Wendy Talaro is a very successful individual in her own right. And what is amazing about this situation is that it is no respecter of zip codes. It is no respecter of education. It is no respecter of anything. Okay? It doesn't matter if you're rich or you're poor or you're, you know, you have a PhD or not. In fact, it seems to me that sometimes borderline personality disordered individuals want to pick the creme de la creme, you know, to be their other selves. And I'm sure AJ will have a comment on that. But Wendy, apart from sharing with us here, has a business, and she actually creates edibles, edible landscaping for Calva. What is that? What is that? Tell me what you do, because that's really fascinating.
Well, I specialize in creating sustainable edible gardens using perennials and California natives.
So for those of us who feel like we're city slickers and we actually think that, hey, maybe I better start growing something in the backyard, or maybe I better rip out the lawn. You know, there's this new movement where people are trying to turn the White House lawn into an edible vegetable garden, and their signature's going out to Barack Obama right now to make a change we can eat. Isn't that interesting? You should be interested.
That's fantastic.
In
yeah. I'm all for it.
It's called Eat the View. So if any of you are interested in, you know, Eat the View, you want to go out and check out Eat the View. And, you know, if you want to put your signature to that. And when we, me and you, of course, are invited to the inauguration any day now, we shall go with our salad dressing and just start eating off the lawn. So Wendy, do you actually put in the plants and everything before we go back to this fascinating topic?
I will actually go ahead with the design, the installation itself, from stem to stern, start to finish, as well as maintenance.
Great. I think I want to add you to my website, and if anyone wants to get in touch with you in that regard, you know, then they can do that as well. Okay, well, back with everybody. I want to thank everyone who's on the line, and we're going to get to as many calls as we can. We have AJ Mahari on. AJ, is there something you want to talk about really quickly before I get to the calls?
No.
Great. All right, so we will go to Frank from Pasadena. Frank, welcome to Page to Pantry. What's
Hi,
up?
How are you?
I'm good, now that you're on.
I'm listening to you guys for the first time. I had a question. Where do you say someone's borderline, bipolar, or the question? I was in a relationship for 3 years, and it's ongoing. Where she'll go, we're together for 4 months.
Frank, are you there? Something has happened. Hey, Frank, if you can hear me over the radio, call back and. It's Frank there? D'Angelo?
I'm here.
Hey, you're there. You survived. All right. I'm listening to you. And the phone line apparently could feel how turbulent this relationship was. Tell me more about it.
Well, it's just, ongoing for 3 years. In 3 years we were together, we lived together. She left 7 times. Every time she left, she said she couldn't hang the relationship. I was with somebody else, which, of course, wasn't true. Now we split up in August. She started calling September. She stopped calling me again. Now she's doing it again. And what she does is she'll send me songs through the phone. And just when I think, well, you know, maybe I can work with her again. Maybe we can talk again. You know, I told her, honey, we can go to therapy together. I said, well, let's see each other. Let's go to breakfast. Let's go to lunch and talk. She goes, well, I'm not ready to see you. And I go, then why are you calling me and sending me songs and telling me you miss me and you love me? And she puts her son on the phone to cry that he wants to see me, but when I want to reach out to them to take him somewhere and be together with them, she doesn't want any part of it.
AJ, so
Just when I'm getting better,
having a lot of trouble hearing.
When I'm getting better, everything goes back to the same boat. I have emotions again for her, and then she starts up saying things that she's with somebody else, and she doesn't see me right now. What do you do? What do you do in a situation like that? Do you just say enough is enough?
Okay, AJ can't hear you very well, so I'm going to just do a quick synopsis of what you've said. He's been in a relationship for 3 years, and it's the constant breakup in, you know, in 3 years they've broken up, was it 10 times or so in 3 years?
Well,
and
10 times she's left me, and it's the mood swings, and the way she goes about it, I just can't believe that it's actually happening.
So is your main question, Frank, should you stay or should you leave? I mean, she sends songs, she's calling constantly, she's having her son cry over the phone that he wants to see you. When you try to go back to her, she wants no part of it, reeling you in just to dash your heart to pieces. I know Wendy has experienced this firsthand. AJ, is this very common with borderline personality disorder?
Yeah, it is. It is actually very common, and it's like, it's very toxic too. It's not really a good thing for anyone to stay involved in. And I think that it speaks to how, you know, the emotional dysregulation of BPD, it's sort of like mood shifts with the wind. But also what this sounds like to me is that this person is trying to just avoid her own fear of abandonment by just keeping him kind of on the scene, but sort of just, you know, pulling him in, pushing him out, just being really manipulative and playing with him like, you know, he doesn't exist, so it's all about her. This is really not a good situation for him to stay in.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny because she'll tell me, I miss you, I love you, but the guy I'm dating, my sister doesn't like him. And I'm like, why? Call me to tell me that things are okay, that your son's okay. Don't call me to tell me that you're with somebody else and expect me to stop my life and help you.
Interesting. Wendy, what do you have to say about this?
First of all, I would suggest that you establish some very firm boundaries. Even if they're just within yourself, to just know that, look, she cannot push your buttons if you disconnect the wires from those buttons and don't allow her to do that. For whatever it's worth, if you can communicate that to her simply, clearly, calmly, no, don't make threats.
Well, one of the reasons I'm calling is because I made a mistake. Just when she started texting me again, I was like, honey, it's going to be fine. Just work. Do what you have to do. But then she texted me on Saturday with something out of the blue, and I flipped. I started literally texting her, cussing her.
She is pushing your buttons.
I'm sorry?
She is pushing your buttons. Disconnect the button.
Exactly.
AJ, what do you have to say about that?
Well, it's, you know, it's just not a healthy situation, and the thing is now, you know, people in this situation, like Frank is into, may also feel that over time it will change somehow, it will magically get better, she will suddenly stop doing this. The bad news really is that this person is showing Frank who she is, and Frank really needs to pay attention to that, because I can't see how he can be having, you know, any kind of, you know, loving, positive experience in this situation. So, yeah, I think Wendy's advice is really good, and I think perhaps, you know, he just needs to think a little bit more about, you know, does this make him happy? And if not, then, you know, why stay engaged with it?
Okay, Frank, if you write me, I'll give my email out at the end. I want to get you this audiobook by A.J. Meharry, Emotional Dysregulation in Borderline Personality. I still like what Elizabeth Brown said. It takes two people to be in a toxic relationship, but only one to change it. You have the power to change your part of this equation, and that's really empowering, and that's the part that I want you to grab a hold of and just, you know, keep going with it, and let me know how it turns out. Maya from Santa Clarita, welcome to Page to Pantry. How are you?
Hi, thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes, Maya.
Hi.
Hi.
I have a little bit of a story to share.
Good, let's hear it.
I am right now going through a divorce
from
a man who I knew in the beginning was ADHD, and upon splitting up with him, began to realize that he was borderline personality. And now, just in the last couple of days, I've realized that there's a lot of overlaps between borderline and narcissistic personality.
Absolutely.
And I'm finding that he's kind of a mixture of both.
Yeah.
So I find that he has the compulsive drinking, compulsive lying, compulsive spending. And I found after splitting up with him, there was compulsive infidelity that I didn't know about. And he basically has decimated my entire life, left me with a lot of debt, and kind of moved on. And it's my fault for having been so dumb to have fallen for him. you know. So it that's the kind of narcissistic part where it's all me, because of course I'm stupid for caring about him, because no one that's smart could care about him.
Is that what you've come to? Is that the impression that he left you with?
That's the impression that he's leaving me with. That's really my fault that he's done all of this.
AJ, quick, what do you have to say to Maya?
Okay, well, again, I only heard bits and pieces, but
okay.
It is sort of like she's saying that she was left with the impression that everything went wrong was her fault.
Mm-hmm.
He was saying that?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and I have a feeling that she's half believing it, that it was her fault for being so dumb.
Oh.
Somebody who's ordinarily so with it and so astute, how could she allow herself to have fallen into this? This idea of, I'm so smart in every other way, how could I be so emotionally, you know, people call it emotionally stupid, which, it, you know, that's an unfair thing to characterize yourself as. But a lot of the people that are writing me who have loved people with borderline personality disorder tend to say, I'm just a dummy when it comes to emotional intelligence. Why couldn't I do better in this regard? What do you say to someone like that, AJ?
Well, I think that, you know, there's the reality that people with borderline personality disorder can be, like, charming, can seem to be, appear to be a lot of things somebody wants. Then people fall in love with them, and then once you've invested time, you know, you care and you love them, and then things start to fall apart. You want to try to fix it. Then it gets into a situation where, like Wendy's talked about, you really kind of have to look at what your issues might be that would, you know, cause you to maybe end up in this kind of relationship. So not only to do an autopsy of the relationship that's ending, but to make sure that you don't fall into another relationship like that. And just quickly I'll say, too, I mean, I have written an e-book called The Dilemma on the Other Side of BPD, and what the questions it answers is, you know, do borderlines feel love? Can borderlines love? And the thing is that, you know, this is a toxic kind of thing that people get involved in. And what it does is it then affects you. So you might have had an average, healthy life going on, but you get into the situation, it's sort of, you know, at the very least, it's subtle emotional abuse. And it sort of, people involved in relationships with people with borderline personality disorder often then start to lose themselves. So when he's saying that it's Maya's fault, which I'm, you know, again, there's the two-party thing, but I'm sure it's not all Maya's fault. But then, you know, she may have doubts because, you know, she's been involved with this so long that she's lost a little bit of who she is, and she has to kind of regain that.
But aren't people with borderline personality disorder chameleons? Don't they try to be everything that they think you want them to be in the beginning to kind of pull you in?
Oh, absolutely, and that's to, you know, make sure that they get what they want and need. It's really not about the other person.
So, you know, you couldn't have a crystal ball at the time, Maya. He did everything that he felt or perceived that you wanted in a partner. And Wendy, you've talked about them kind of ferreting out information about you from your past and then actually playing the savior kind of thing. Like, I'll shield you from all that pain and all the abuse that you went through as a child when, you know.
Or it depends on the borderline. It really depends on the borderline. The borderline afflicted person that I was interacting with had that tack of being the self and being this wonderful balm that, oh my God, how could I have lived without this so long?
And he's then, going to heal everything,
yeah.
You thought. Maya, did that happen in your case?
Totally. That's exactly what happened. He was Mr. Wonderful, and I was actually coming out of a divorce at the time, so I was in a state,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Vulnerable.
Yeah.
Extremely
and
vulnerable.
And really used that to his advantage.
Absolutely.
So.
Maya, I want to get you a copy of A.J. Mahari's Emotional Dysregulation and Borderline Personality. Ina, I see you on the line. Everybody else who's calling in, you can write me at ngaluchi@lavidamed.com. ngaluchi@lavidamed.com. If you go to the KPFK website or the page2pantry.com website, you can find me. I want to thank AJ Mahari for being here with us. I want to thank Wendy Talaro for being here with us. By the middle of the week, if you look on my website, you'll be able to get Wendy's information as well if you want to get into the edible gardening. Thank you so much, and I want to see you here next week, Friday at 1 o'clock on Page to Pantry. Ciao.
You've been listening listening to Page to Pantry with Nikki Gallucci, heard Friday afternoons from 2 to 3 p.m. right here on KPFK 90.7 FM Los Angeles, 98.7 FM Santa Barbara. Stay tuned for more health and spirituality programming with Healthy Planet, Healthy Me with host Sherry Viol up next.
On December 18th, KPFK will hold a one-day fundraiser in support of the station and to help fight hunger in Los Angeles. Each donation you give will go not only to support KPFK, but a percentage of every contribution will be used to feed the hungry in our great city during this holiday season. There are around 72,000 homeless human beings in Los Angeles on any given day, and about 11,000 of those are children. But hunger issues extend even to many who have shelter. On Thursday, December 18th, we will attempt, together with you, to put a dent into those statistics. With each donation, you will give twice and help some of your fellow Angelenos to experience a happier holiday season. Join us in giving a little hope. We will need volunteers for phone banking on Thursday, December 18th, from 6 a.m. until 10:30 p.m. To volunteer, visit kpfk.org and click on volunteer, or call our volunteer coordinator, Tony, at 818-985-2711, extension 513. Happy holidays, all.
If you're looking for a unique way of spreading holiday cheer, you can donate your used car to KPFK. The proceeds will help support listener-sponsored public broadcasting for all of Southern California and beyond. The KPFK Vehicle Donation Program will take care of everything, and if you donate your car before December 31st, you'll qualify for a 2008 deduction. All you have to do is call 877-KPFK-AUTO or donate online at kpfk.org.
Welcome to Healthy Planet, Healthy Me. I'm your host, Sherry Viol. Did you know that in the state of California, we're using approximately 600 plastic bags per second? That's an estimated 19 billion plastic retail carryout bags annually. And the unfortunate part is we only recycle about 1 to 4% of them. Paper or plastic? Might we have an answer to this age-old dilemma? We'll be joined in studio with some of California's leading forces on the matter, Gary Peterson, Governor Schwarzenegger's environmental appointee to the California Recycling Board, Debbie Levin, president of the renowned Environmental Media Association, known as EMMA, and Hart Bochner, one of Hollywood's greenest actors who recently joined the regular cast of The Starter Wife. We'll find out what these three different professionals are doing about the paper or plastic dilemma, and what surprises they have up their green sleeves. We'll take your calls